I'm Karen Hartglass. How are you today? It's October. What day is it today? The 14th of October, 2014. Oh, that's 10-14-2014. Why do those numbers always get me excited? I don't know. I like playing with numbers. And it's 72 degrees Fahrenheit here in New York City on the middle of October day. What's going on here? It's absolutely lovely, but it's normally a little chillier around now. Always things to keep things interesting, right? Never what we expect. I'm not going to look into the cause of why we're having such lovely weather, but I'm going to appreciate it while we have it. So I've got one very special guest today, and later on in the program I'm going to be giving some coverage on a meeting I went to yesterday at the UN with the International Fund for Agricultural Development. It was fascinating, and I want to tell you a little bit about that later. But first, let's bring on my first guest, my first and only guest, Vita O'Shell, and she's a consciousness expansion teacher, a holistic nutritionist, optimal health expert, yoga and meditation teacher, and web TV host. She's the author of a book, Healing and Prevention Through Nutrition, and hundreds of articles on mind, body, spirit topics. Her health and body-oriented teaching focuses on natural, whole, plant-based, alkaline, and organic nutrition for optimal health and longevity. Her mind and spirit-oriented teaching focuses on consciousness expansion, mindful and heart-centered living for optimal joy and inner peace. She's the creator of Healthitarian Lifestyle for the well-being of the mind, body, and spirit, and the EBTV online video network. Her teaching inspires and empowers audiences worldwide to be the change they wish to see. Evita, thank you for being here.
Oh, it is my pleasure, Karen. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being here today, and thank you for being on the planet right now. We need you.
Oh, thank you so much, and likewise.
So, my dear listeners, as you heard me reading Evita's bio, were you thinking that, wow, this is Karen's kind of guest? This is all about what I'm all about, and it's always such a pleasure to meet like-minded people who are out there doing what I'm so inspired and passionate about, and it only magnifies my own inspiration when I know other people are doing such great things. So, let's talk about you and your work. Let's talk a little bit about consciousness expansion.
Sounds good.
What is it? And well, how do we do it?
Very, very good question, Karen. Is, you know, we're used to the word consciousness and being conscious, for the most part, I think, in our society, still in a very simple kind of way, where, you know, we, as long as we're awake, we're conscious, right? And if we faint, etc., then we are unconscious. But there's, of course, a different type of consciousness, and this is what my work and so many other teachers today on the planet are referring to when we speak about consciousness. So the very first aspect of that is to be aware, to be mindful. And one might still think, well, aren't I that all the time and whenever I'm awake? But the truth is that we're not. Most of the time, we are very much operating out of our subconscious mind, so to speak, where we are basically running regularly conditioned programs via the mind, living out of a lot of past, out of stories, out of habits, sort of like on autopilot. That's really the best way for people to understand it. And while that is great, and it's a great adaptation and part of our evolution to basically live on planet Earth, there of course come various downsides with this. If we allow old programming and conditioning, and if we are not conscious or careful or mindful or aware about what programs, what level of thinking are we operating from, then of course we are usually not making decisions or choices that are for our best, for the best of our health, our well-being, and also for the best and well-being of our planet, etc. So that's really the summary of consciousness, and I include the word expansion because it's one thing to get back to that state of consciousness, but it's a never-ending journey. There's always a deeper, you know, aspect that we can go into, and that's where the expansion part comes in, that it is really any aspect, any topic, any area of life that we look at, there's always a depth that can be increased and expanded upon in terms of how we see and understand it. So in terms of how do we do it, well, there's so many ways. You know, for some people, it comes easier than others. And it could be about, it's as simple as in this very moment, I would ask the audience, for example, just become aware of the breath. Become aware of what are you thinking right now? What are you hearing right now? What perhaps sense or, you know, visual sights and such are around you? Really look. That starts to, you know, change the mind to become fully present, fully mindful, rather than just, oh, yes, I'm in the same environment. I'm, you know, hearing the same people, dot, dot, dot. But of course, anything from yoga, meditation, tai chi, qigong, various other stillness and holistic practices all can help us tap into the power of the conscious mind. And if nothing more, access that subconscious mind, figure out what beliefs, what perspectives do we hold about ourselves, about others in life, so that we can figure out, are these really serving us or not? Because more often than not, as we are seeing personally and collectively, we are living from programming and ideas that are not serving our greater good.
Can I give you an example?
Absolutely.
Yesterday, I was going into the subway here in New York City, and I was on my way to the UN for a meeting I'm going to be talking about later in the program. And as I went down the stairs, at the bottom of the stairs, there was a body curled up, almost fetal position, on the ground in dark blue sweats. I couldn't see who it was. Their back was towards me. There was a body on the floor, not moving. And there were a bunch of other people that just kept going down the stairs, walking past the body as if it was an everyday thing, and went into further down into the subway. And for a moment, I was just stunned. What do I do? And but I was very much in the present moment, but it really looked like nobody else was. They were somewhere else, and it was just so matter-of-fact for them. I ended up calling 911, and when I found somebody in the subway who worked there, they were also, too, very numb and matter-of-fact to it, like, oh, yeah, this is like an everyday thing. Yeah. And it was just a sad example of the things we get numb to, the things we're accustomed to, and how we're not conscious of what's going on around us.
Absolutely. And it translates to, again, as I said, every area of our life, including especially when it comes to even how we feed ourselves, the types of meals that we choose, how we even drive, how we get around, how we do so much of our work, how we interact and talk to others. There's just so much that is simply coming out of habitual patterns rather than conscious choices, that what really represents me right now, not perhaps what I grew up with, not perhaps what I was taught to believe, but, you know, every single day we are changing, our world is changing, information is changing. We need to stay conscious as much as possible, because that truly is where empowerment lies, to make the best choices for us, and again, in every single area of our life.
I think this is the most challenging thing for humans.
Yes.
This is it. Being present, being conscious. I think this is our biggest challenge. We're not very good at it, and a lot of people react to things that have happened to them in the past, and then they keep reliving them somehow, or something triggers and it strengthens those memories. It brings them to the present and makes them stronger and fresher, but they're living in the past. And oh, big challenges. Okay, so you have a number of different websites, and they're probably all connected, but they focus on different things. I'm looking at your Avita Oshel site, and it's lovely, calming pastel colors. the evolving beings is where we would learn about consciousness expansion.
that's one of the sites. And that, in again, as you pointed out, they are indeed all interconnected, because as I continued on my journey of awakening and transformation and personal evolution, I realized that's the very nature and essence of life, is that everything truly is interconnected. And when I, you know, thought about, okay, what is driving my passions to help people with? Yes, there was the aspect of the mind. Yes, there was the aspect of the spirit, but there was also the aspect of the body. And that's why I can't today, for example, talk about health without mentioning the mind, or how even spiritual matters tie into it. Or if I talk about environmental, you know, topics and such, all of it connects. And the more, again, we see those connections, and that's something I help people with as well in the process of that expansion of consciousness, the more, again, we get to see the bigger picture of how every single one of our choices, our thoughts, our words, our actions, is creating the reality personally and collectively that we live in. And so on Evolving Beings, I do focus most on spirit and mind matters, but that consciousness aspect ties right into all my health sites and topics dealing with health and body as well.
Now, I don't remember all the details, but I read about you a while back when I first was introduced to you, and I remember you were originally a teacher, and then you decided you wanted to do what you're doing now, and you just took this risk and of starting something new and giving up what you were trained to do. How does one get the courage to do something like that?
You know, if anybody ever told me a few years before I did it that I would do something like that, I would have never believed them. And so today, you know, I can't really say to people, it could be a process. I mean, it could be something that you consciously decide and start to work towards. And there's many ways of doing that. But what happened and how it went for me is that I just simply continued my journey of growth and expansion. And as I continued to do that, there just came more and more points along my personal journey and career-wise, specifically here, that I started to see things again from that bigger picture perspective. And I started to also envision how I wanted my life to be once I realized, especially that we are conscious life creators. Life doesn't just happen. We are creating it. I realized, my goodness, the potential here is immense. And so many, many factors were driving me basically to go beyond the traditional classroom, where I can only do so much, and basically teach on a global level where I can reach more people, especially the adults who are influencing the high school, you know, kids and such, who I was teaching at that time. And, you know, the courage, I'd love to say again that it was some 10-step process, but it just came. It was, and that's why I'm also a firm believer of divine timing. We can't do something by force or something before we're ready. Things just don't work out well when we try to force things into being. There just came a point where one thing just kept adding up as I kept gathering information and seeing how it all fits together, to the point that it was just like so obvious for me that I could not stay in a traditional school system, in a traditional system of work, etc. And that was really, I think, the pivoting point where the courage just naturally came with it, rather than, you know, having to find it to do it.
Right. And I agree with you. And I do believe that we should all be doing what feels good to us. Unfortunately, many people either don't know how, or it just, they're not ready. I'm not really sure. I want to believe that we can all be doing what we want to do. But there's a lot of work out there that needs to be done that doesn't seem pleasant to many people, and that's unfortunate. I was just wondering, when you were a teacher in the school system, the structured school system, now with all the work that you've been doing, do you think there's a better way to teach?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that was one of the things, too, that I just started to see that, you know, my typical students were around 17 years old, and the hunger, the passion, the hope within them for new information, for, you know, inquisitiveness, for creativity, for expanding the mind and thinking outside of the box is there. But unfortunately, the common school system, whether it's Canada or the US or many parts of the world, is just, you know, and again, I don't mean to put it down, but it is what it is. But it's very limiting. It's very limiting for the human mind. We're basically taught what to think rather than how to think. And so that was definitely, again, part of my decision that I just couldn't participate in it anymore. But it's not that there aren't other outlets that I wouldn't have, for example, taught in, because I do, for parents who are, you know, asking me, well, okay, what's an alternative that I can send my kids to? Absolutely, there are alternatives, but they're not going to be, generally speaking, in the traditional public school system. There's anything, you know, from various private schools. One of the very, very popular and really great for inquisitiveness and entertaining kids' creativity and really trying to propel them to focus on their gifts and talents rather than just, you know, this is one way of doing it and that's kind of it, is, for example, the Waldorf school system. Mm-hmm. More parents, of course, are moving towards homeschooling. And I know that's not a possible option for many yet, but it is an option also, more so than perhaps it's ever been before. So we do have choices. And of course, less students today, I think, at least what I've been sensing from the statistics, are, you know, falling that for the idea that we have to, after high school, follow the traditional route of university or college. There are so many self-made entrepreneurs, and so much self-learning can take place today that that's also a very, very powerful pivotal point for many.
Very good. I'm wondering, now you work with people on a variety of different issues, even though they're all connected.
Yep.
And I mean, I imagine each individual is different in terms of how you work with them. But and is it mostly food related?
When you work with people, right now, sorry.
Yeah, continue.
For the most part, right now, I do tend to focus more on holistic health and nutrition. I do sometimes a little bit of consulting into more mind and spiritual matters, but it really all depends on my personal projects and things like that. So for the most part, any consulting and work that I do currently one-on-one with people is holistic health and nutrition related. But that always ties back into the mind in one way or another as well.
So some of the things that people are interested in when they're trying to get healthy is they want things to be easy and fast.
Yes.
And I struggle with this because if you get good at preparing your own food, you're going to get better at it and faster, and you can learn some shortcuts. But how do you feel when people say, you know, I want to eat healthy and I want it to be easy and fast?
Well, it's definitely sort of like a two-way street where we have to consider that, exactly like you said, as we gain practice or as we get better at anything, we become more efficient. So that aspect definitely is there. But I also do share with people that even though I can teach you how to make absolutely amazing, wholesome plant-based meals in 15 minutes or less, we can't compare, you know, time or meal preparation time of wholesome natural plant foods, or really any foods of whatever somebody might be eating, but as long as it's whole natural, rather than a packaged product of something that you're going to stick into the microwave, you know, peel off the wrapper and stick into the microwave for, I don't know, 50 seconds or so. But at the same time, we shouldn't even compare that. It's like, you know, comparing a dune buggy to a complete four-door car. I mean, that's just a simple example, but there are, you know, they're both maybe take you from A to B, but the point is that it's going to be an extremely different experience. It's going to be an extremely different journey. And when it comes to food in your body, I mean, that the differences are huge for your present health, present weight, future health, future weight, well-being, happiness levels, even longevity. So many things have to be factored in. So what I mean by all this is that I do try to invite people to see food preparation not as a chore, not as something that, how can I do it in the fastest time possible, but invite them to see food preparation as one of your most amazing and most liked hobbies. And I really do try to inspire people to really fall in love with their food, fall in love with their meal preparation, fall in love with themselves, because that is what's going to propel this journey and make it so powerful, so real, and so enjoyable, where you know, whether it's 5 minutes or 15 minutes or even longer, depending on the type of meal, etc., it's not seen, again, as a chore. And it comes down also to the fact that, you know, we give so much of our time to so many things that give no value, in fact, degrade or destruct our health or society or environment. And we never think twice. But when it comes to meal preparation, the one of the most important areas of our life that can lead to so much high quality of living, and again, on every single level of our being, that's the one that we are trying to sabotage with, you know, like, let's get in and out in the shortest time possible.
Yeah, humans. I'm so fascinated by human beings. Now, another thing is, especially with adults are really just older children.
Yeah.
And a lot of older children, adults, don't like their vegetables. And I'm a big proponent of kale. And a lot of people tell me they've tried it, they don't like it, and they'd really like to juice or eat more of it, but they don't like it. What do you do with people who don't like to eat the healthy food, but they want to eat healthy?
Well, several things here that definitely can be done. First and foremost, and I'm taking this advice from Dr. Popper, which is so great, and I like her approach to it, mm-hmm. is that there's such a variety of fruits and vegetables and leafy greens that if one particular one doesn't agree with you, there are literally like 99 plus other ones. So even though kale is absolutely one of my favorites and on my, you know, top list of really healthy and valuable foods and leafy greens to eat, if that one, for example, is an absolute no-go, start somewhere where you will feel more comfortable, such as spinach. Spinach, generally speaking, especially baby spinach, has literally no taste in salads or smoothies, etc., unless you get the very mature spinach, for example. So just starting with what you can, starting wherever may be most available for you, rather than going for, you know, something that maybe somebody who's already very into a more holistic and lifestyle and eating that is more aligned to wholesome natural plant foods. The other tip I always give people is you have to factor in that your taste buds have to detoxify. Our taste buds in our society, for the most part, are on like hyper alert due to the amount of excessive salt, sugar, additives, all sorts of flavors. You know, most people don't know what natural cherries, for example, taste like because they're so used to the artificial cherry flavors that are found in whether it's candy, you know, juices or whatever the case may be. So it's, of course, it might be a little shock to the system when you try maybe a green smoothie based on kale or some kind of a garlic kale salad, let's say. You might think, this is, you know, so different, but it's not that it's bad. It's just that you have to give account to the fact that your taste buds need to calm down, really, from this hyper state. And that's why detoxifying not just the body, but part of this journey will include detoxification of the taste buds, where natural, wholesome foods begin to taste good again. So nobody is being punished by eating their kale. They actually are, you know, liking it and seeking it, and then finding ways, of course, the third tip is of how to make it work for you. So not just the particular food, but when it comes to kale, I mean, there's so many different varieties of kale smoothies, so many different varieties of kale salads, so many ways we can add it as a steamed veggie to an amazing stir fry or something. You can make it ginger based, you can make it garlic based. I mean, lemon almost always makes kale taste absolutely phenomenal. So it's just about saying, okay, I understand maybe the way I've had it or tried it somewhere wasn't working for me, but let's work with it. Let's see what's my favorite, you know, type of spice, herb, etc. How can I bring this together? And that creativity aspect, but that, again, it comes usually as we get more enticed by this journey.
Now, did you figure all of this stuff out on your own? Or did you have some mentors or an aha moment where all of this information just flooded into your consciousness?
I, you know, see it really as both, because there was a pivotal point in my personal journey, roughly, I think it was back in the year 2006, where things literally flooded. Up to that point, I was still, you know, my personal education, my personal career up to that point was taking the usual turn. But around 2006, I had, that's why what I call nothing short of either some major, you know, flood of information or expansion of consciousness. Some people, you know, call it some kind of a spiritual awakening or something. I mean, for me, I just know that was such a pivotal point in my life that after that, nothing was ever seen the same. And things just started to, you know, expand and widen, and how I understood things, how I put things together. But in terms of a health and nutrition front, not any personal mentors that I, or anybody I've ever worked with, but when we get in touch with our inner being, when we really, you know, start to, and this is something else I always invite people to do, is find what means most to you. What are your standards? What are your priorities? This is something that I find when I work with people, we don't have. And so no wonder we kind of go with wherever the wind blows when it comes to nutrition advice or, you know, life advice or whatever the case may be, is that you have to figure out, what do you want? What do you stand for? What are your priorities, values? Once I did that for myself, all of a sudden it's like the right material, the right resources. It was just one amazing moment of synchronicity after another, where I know you're also a fan of Dr. Furman's work, for example, that would come along. And people whose work that I really resonated with, I would just come by, read what they had to say or hear what they had to say, integrate it with my personal understanding. And, you know, I always say, take the best of what resonates, put it together, though, consciously with your belief system, rather than, you know, just, oh, this person said this, okay, now that's my belief too. Absolutely, we can't do that, or else we're just going back to basically the way we've been living for much too long, where we're just not conscious of why we believe or think the way we do. We need to know, what information is it? Why do I feel this is appropriate for me, let's say?
Back to your website, you have a wealth of information, and you have this Healthitarian series, which I was fortunate to be a part of. And if you go to responsibleeatingandliving.com, you can link to it on the homepage. You can see me and Evita together chatting. And that was a really lovely moment, and I thank you for that. And there are many other wonderful people that you've spoken to that you include in the Healthitarian series.
Yes.
Very nice. And you've written Healing and Prevention Through Nutrition, and now you have another book that you're working on?
Well, it's actually the second edition of Healing and Prevention Through Nutrition. The first edition came out in 2011, and the new edition, the second edition, is coming out actually next month, which will be November 2014. And it's almost a new book because it's almost doubled in size, but I've just included so much more. Everything that I do, I really try to empower people on every area and level of being. And so the first book was, again, as the title states, focused on teaching people how to eat, what to eat, just for optimal health, focusing around the food. But even then, in that book I mentioned, there's so much more that has to be factored in to understanding why some people get sick and why others don't, especially, you know, when we see people who have absolutely are living what seems to be very healthy, holistic lifestyles and still get sick, or others who are perhaps eating and drinking anything they want and seem to, you know, not come down with any disease or live well into their, you know, elderly years. So in this edition, there is a new, brand new part, part three, and it's called Beyond Food. And in there, I look at many things, offer more tips and lots of advice. But one major chapter is about the mind-body connection. And I really help people understand how we think and how, until we examine our thinking, our perceptions, our beliefs, that can continue to sabotage our health despite the perfect diet.
So if we've got our mind all in sync and under control, does that mean we could eat anything we want?
Well, no.
Some people can.
Here's how it goes, truly. I mean, especially for those perhaps in the audience who are more interested in some of the quantum science and physics ideas, or very, you know, deep spirituality of sometimes we hear these amazing feats that some yogis are able to do, you know, the mind is extremely powerful. And the truth is that we are not even scratching the surface of how powerful our mind is. But, you know, let's just use, I don't know, the average hamburger is a very popular food item for most people in North America. So most people are well aware that hamburgers, for many, many reasons, are really not a good idea for our health and weight. But if somebody were to, you know, say they exactly, you know, have their mind all aligned and things like that, would they be able to eat it and not suffer the negative consequences? I basically would not be betting on those types of risks or, you know, roulette, et cetera, as it sometimes is said. And here's why, because we have to consider the collective consciousness. And in our collective consciousness, if you are basically going against the grain of something, I mean, it's, and again, this could be a very, very long quantum science kind of discussion, but it's not a very easy task to do. The odds are basically against you. So why not go with what is proven versus and basis on our collective understanding of reality and how things work? And when it comes specifically to our bodies and our health, we know without a shadow of a doubt that wholesome plant foods are optimal foods for us. There's no study that's going to come out tomorrow and say, oh, you know, we were wrong. Fruits and vegetables, they're really not so good for us. No, we know this pretty much since the beginning of time. These are the foods that have always sustained human beings when it came to boosting the immune system and keeping us really vital and healthy. Other foods, they may have a role depending, again, which food it is. Absolutely. It depends on the different macronutrients and things like that. But that's really what I'm getting at is that you know, I wouldn't be even, we have as a planet to go up to a much, much higher understanding of our mind and evolution before we can even attempt to try to say, well, maybe we could just eat anything and we'll be just fine. It's just, we're not even close to there. And truthfully speaking, when we do evolve as a planet, that I believe won't even be a consideration, because by then we will understand so much more of the natural laws of the universe and our planet and how our bodies work to understand why some things really just shouldn't be in our body, period, and not even desire them.
I'm glad you said that. I was just thinking the same thing. We're probably tuned into the same collective consciousness.
Yes.
Now, you have a garden and you grow some of your own food.
Yes, it's an incredible journey.
What are you growing? What do you have?
Well, this season I grew potatoes for the first time, which was just fantastic, and I look forward to doing it again. But I really try to grow anything and everything that is something that, for example, I won't be able to find easily locally, or perhaps something that I eat a lot of. So I always have lots of different leafy greens growing, although I also depend on wild leafy greens as well, which I have an abundance around me. Mm. Carrots, beets, broccoli. I even have a strawberry patch, lots of different squashes, anything from zucchini to either buttercup or butternut squashes, different herbs and anything, you know, from cilantro and basil and such, and lots of tomatoes and cucumbers, as those are always consumed in large amounts in my household, and garlic and onions. And that's something that I do include in a lot of my dishes as well. So that would be the most common things that I grow.
And what's your growing season? You're somewhere in Canada, right?
Yes, I am. But where I am, actually, it's a very short growing season, and I'm not even that far north. I'm in Ontario, but it depends for any gardeners who are listening or anybody who knows about their growing zones. I'm roughly on the border of a zone 3 and 4. So this is not a very friendly zone one that provides you a good long growing season. We have the risk of a late frost right into the end of May, early June, and the risk of an early frost, which this year did come on September 18th. So that doesn't leave much time for growing, but it still all works out. So I do invite, definitely, I say to people, you know, it doesn't matter if you have an apartment, just grow a pot of basil.
Yeah.
That connection with our food is so sacred, and it just, you know, there are benefits beyond what most of us can understand, and until we start living it, and then it just, like, again, catapults and picks up momentum.
And so when it's not the growing season, where are you getting your food and what are you eating?
Well, I try to put away a lot of the food. So usually I have a lot of my own food right until the end of the year, till the end of December, more or less. Sometimes I even had frozen kale right into the new year. So that depends also on how I, you know, how much I grow, how much I put away and such. But I do also depend on the local farmers here. And I also supplement with some of their stuff. For example, I just bought, because our potatoes were enough to pretty much make a few dinners throughout the season. And we still have a little bit for this month. But I do buy, for example, for the winter, 50 pounds of potatoes, carrots and such from local farmers that I can then also have and use as long as possible into the fall and winter. winter months, bushels of apples, they last really well, especially too. You can keep a lot of squash for a long time. I freeze a lot of my kale or other leafy greens that freeze well. Fruits, especially when it's a good season for wild blackberries and blueberries and things like that. So it's also about working again exactly with your availability, with your needs. But other than that, then I do depend on grocery stores and our grocery stores. Even though I live next to a very, very, very tiny community, I am blessed that both of our small grocery stores do have an organic section. And so I would depend on that when nothing is left in my perhaps home freezer from local sources.
Sounds pretty good. Sounds like you're walking the walk while we're talking here, doing what you believe in, and that's a good thing. Anything else you want to share with us before we go?
Well, it's really what you just finished saying. That's really the biggest, I think, takeaway that I try to share is, and I love, you know, Gandhi's words, which perhaps have been oversaid now, but to me, they are ever so pertinent. And that's really to be that change that you wish to see, to really live that. Because at the end of the day, change comes from within. It's not when the governments change. It's not where when society changes. We are the change. We really are. And it's, you know, people like yourself, like myself, who are seeking something different. And why? Because we understand that there are not just amazing benefits for our health and well-being, but also for other human beings and the planet as a whole. And that is how, again, we can create a new society one person at a time. So I always say to people, start wherever you feel comfortable, wherever you may be. You don't have to, there's no state of perfection here. It's just keep moving, keep expanding one step at a time, but moving towards a better state of quality and quality of life, health for yourself and for our entire planet.
Such a good point. And you've probably heard so many times that many people say, why should I bother? Nobody else is going to, or the world's not going to change. Mm-hmm. And one reason to do it is because it feels better.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It feels better for ourselves. And you're also making a positive difference for the planet. But number one, it feels good when you're doing the right thing.
Exactly. And it really, in the end, it benefits you more than anything. Like if we don't use as many chemicals in our home, it's not that you're trying to, you know, yes, it benefits the planet, but first and foremost, it benefits you, right? So it's all those little things that it's when we start thinking, you're not doing it for anybody else. And so why should you? Well, it's again, because you can improve the quality of your health and life so much. And it, like you said, it feels really, really good.
Feels really good. Avita, thank you so much for joining me, and it's all about food and for everything that you do.
You're so very welcome, Karen. Again, it's been such a wonderful pleasure sharing and connecting with you.
I agree. Sometime perhaps we'll meet in some physical space.
Would be wonderful.
Yeah. Okay. Take care.
Take care.
Well, that was good. AvitaOshel.com. That's where you're going to get all of her good stuff. Let's take a little break, and then I want to share with you some interesting information on the event I just came back from at the UN. We'll be back. Everybody, I'm Karen Hartglass, and we're back for the second part of today's show, It's All About Food, here on October 14, 2014. So I think I'll tell you a little story. Once upon a time, actually once upon a yesterday morning, I was invited to what was billed as an exclusive breakfast with Kaneo Nwanze, who is the president of the UN International Fund for Agricultural Development. And he was giving a presentation about speaking, about waking up the world to the severe consequences of what happens when people are hungry. That sounded like up my alley, so I was very delighted to go. And I wanted to tell you what happened. So I knew it was a breakfast, and that was the first red alert for me, so I'm thinking, I wonder what these food-focused people are going to be serving for breakfast, and will their breakfast be a kind of conscious breakfast or an unconscious breakfast. Do you know what I mean? Well, before I got there, I had a little smug conversation with myself, and I made sure that I brought my own tea made with my filtered and distilled water and my organic bulk blackberry tea and a little unsweetened organic soy milk, and I carried it in a lovely little glass bottle with a rubber protective exterior. So I had my great tea, and I brought a couple of organic pears with me. I was ready to go. When I got there, sure enough, what do you think they were serving for this exclusive breakfast? Well, we had coffee and tea. We had three kinds of cow milk. We had half and half, full milk, full-fat milk, and non-fat milk. There were a couple of little bowls. One had every kind of sweetener imaginable, every kind of white powder sweetener, like Equal and Splenda and white sugar, and there was sugar in the raw. And did you know that sugar is the second most addictive substance next to cocaine? I just learned that. We're going to be talking about that in a couple of weeks, but I want to get back to what I'm talking about. And then there was a little container with jellies in it, and it wasn't a brand I was familiar with, but the ingredients were. There was a little high fructose corn syrup in there. Delightful. And then, of course, we had a selection of white flour bread foods, croissants, bagels, America's favorite foods. But from my point of view, these are foods that are not only disease-promoting, but they're also environmentally destructive. And it just, I don't know why I'm always so surprised when I'm going to an event with health experts or food experts, and you get the same junk served. Is it because that's what we want to eat, or is it because we don't know any better? So I was a little frustrated there, but not surprised. And then there were, this wasn't a big event. There were only about 10 of us. There were some people from the Wall Street Journal and Bloomberg News and the Progressive Radio Network, me. And Kaneo Nwanze, who's the president of the International Fund for Agricultural Development. The acronym is IFAD, and you can find out more about them at IFAD.org, IFAD.org. He was a lovely gentleman and charming and very articulate and shared lots of information and stories and some concerns. And they do some really nice work there where he was really clear to say that they don't want to give subsidies to help people buying food. What they want to do is they want to invest in people. They invest in farmers and their families, rural people. And he made it very clear that these people that they help, primarily in Africa and other countries, they're not victims, and they're not looking for a handout. They're looking to build their agricultural businesses. And this is great. I really like that mission. But, of course, you know me. I always find something to be frustrated with, and sure enough, I was. So after we had a lovely presentation, it was open to questions, and my question was, what kind of agriculture are you supporting? And then I clarified a little bit, talking about here in the United States and in other countries, we've made a lot of mistakes. We've made mistakes with pesticides and herbicides and genetically modified organisms and monocropping and growing foods for animals to feed people, which is very inefficient, and growing foods like wheat and sugarcane and sugar beets for sugar and corn for corn syrup in order to make processed foods. And the result is we're sick. We have heart disease, diabetes, and cancer. It's expensive. We're destroying the planet with these unsustainable methods of agriculture. And I wanted him to know, are these people going to learn from our mistakes? Are you supporting agriculture like organic agriculture? Are you using native wild grasses and wild flowers, like we learned a few weeks ago with Eric Mader, using beneficial insects in order to balance the crop production so that pests don't overtake the crops and you don't have to dump toxic chemicals on your crops? Are we protecting the earth? And I didn't really get a very good response. He wasn't thinking the same way that I was. He shared some stories about people in China who are growing hundreds of thousands of chickens and how it's a good thing and they've got a good business going. He was not focused on organic production. I think he's focused more on just people growing food, and I can understand that. But there are opportunities here, and there's a lot of funding that's being used. And why aren't we doing the best that we possibly can? Is it because people don't know what the best thing is? Do they think they're doing what's best? I want to think that that's what's going on, but you have to understand I'm extremely frustrated because why does history have to keep repeating itself? Why do we have to keep exporting bad ideas? You know what I'm talking about. We have India and China right now, and as their economies grow, they're eating more animals and more processed food, and they've got diabetes. The numbers are hitting the roof. They've never had these health issues before. Do we want to trade poverty for bad health and a destroyed environment? Oh, so you can imagine how frustrated I was. And let's see, what else? So we talked about a number of things, and one of the things you may have heard about with respect to Ebola is right now it's primarily affecting three countries, and it has the opportunity to affect other countries. But one of the things he talked about is that the people in those three countries are not going to the fields to grow their food, and they do export food to other countries in the surrounding area. So he said what we're going to see very soon is a food shortage, not just in those three countries that are impacted, but all around those countries as well. And that's a frightening thing. And so as we always talk about how everything is connected, oftentimes when countries are having food crisis, the United States, other countries will come in and provide subsidies, provide very low-cost grains and things. And often that puts the few farmers that are struggling to survive and grow food for their people, puts them out of business. They can't compete with those cheap grains, those subsidized foods. And he made an important point that the consumers in those countries have to have the demand for wanting local farmers to produce their food. So we're all kind of connected, and we're all responsible for everything that we want. But I really like the concept of the IFAD, Investing in Rural People. And you might visit their website, ifad.org, and see they've got hundreds of different projects that they're involved in. Most of them are food related. He was talking about how some of these local farmers, for example, he was just in California, and he saw that somebody, what was the country it was from? Anyway, this one farmer had coffee beans in California. And that was a little flag for me, too. I mean, it's great that some of these small farmers can sell their products to other countries, but is that really the way we want to go to have these poor folks sell coffee, sugar, tobacco, whatever those commodity foods, sell them to the richer countries so that we can have our treats? I just wish that we could have, there was a way to have a better plan in place so that the priority for everyone in every local region would be to grow nutritious food first for their people before they start shipping out other goodies for richer places. But he made gave out some really fascinating numbers, and he said that investing in agriculture is 5 times more effective than any other business at reducing poverty. And that's really important. So what they're doing, investing in rural farmers, really has a tremendous impact on poverty. And it makes me think of the big corporations that are promoting genetically modified food, how they say it's going to feed the world. Well, it's not going to feed the world. What will feed the world is investing in these farmers themselves so that they can grow their own food, whatever they want to grow, and make enough money to feed their families and send their children to school. Let's see. So that was my adventure. Now, I mentioned it was really ironic. After leaving this food event, I went back home and I took the subway. And as I entered the subway, I saw 3 things all within close proximity of each other. There was a very frail man in frayed clothing. He had a cane. He had his hand out. He looked like he might be blind or had a vision problem. I couldn't really tell. And then right nearby him were two young, very vivacious women who were chatting together, and they were standing behind one of those tables with literature, Jehovah's Witnesses with the Awake magazine. You've seen that sometimes, and there was some headlines that said, "What does the Bible teach us?" And then behind them was someone sleeping on a bench, and he looked like he might be parked there for quite a while, like a homeless person, for example. And I just thought it was very odd to see this picture together. And when we've talked about consciousness before, here are a couple of people talking about doing good. What does the Bible teach you? And yet there were 2 people in desperate need so close to them. But we're at this point in our consciousness because of everything going around us. We either feel like there's nothing we can do to help people that are just 10 feet away from us. It's fascinating to me. So the message that I got from the UN event yesterday, Kanayo Nwanze, he said what he wanted us to walk away with was to wake up the people. And we were just talking about consciousness. We need to all wake up a little and be aware of what's around us. I didn't eat my 2 organic pears that I brought with me to the lecture, so I gave it to the guy who had his hand out, and I hope that helped him. It's really hard to know what to do, but being numb, I don't think that's a good thing. I think we should try and do as much as we can do, even if it's just looking in people's eyes and giving them a little smile. Okay, well, I just want you to digest that for a little while. I want to remind you of a few things. One is the video interview of Evita Oshel and myself. It's on the homepage of responsibleeatingandliving.com. It's about 45 minutes, and I enjoyed it. So if you watch it, I hope you do too. I want to tell you next week we have Chef AJ and Maya Gupta. Chef AJ is a chef and culinary instructor. And Maya Gupta, I've been trying to get her on the program for a very long time, and I think it's really going to happen next week. She's with the Animals and Society Institute. And another thing I wanted to invite you to is a free event tomorrow evening with John and Ocean Robbins. It's called the Healthy Kitchen Power Hour. It's free, again. You have to sign up at healthy.foodrevolution.org, healthy.foodrevolution.org. I'm working with them, and kind of excited about this project. It's at 5:30 Pacific time tomorrow and 8:30 Eastern time tomorrow, Wednesday, October 15th, at healthy.foodrevolution.org. Okay. Well, I want to thank you for listening today. I've enjoyed it. I hope you have. And remember, you can always send me an email at info@realmeals.org. I love to hear from you. Okay. Remember, have a delicious week, won't you? Bye-bye.